This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Crypto, much in the news. It rises and then it falls. There are many different kinds of crypto. The important thing to understand is that it's not a centralized currency. It's global. It might even be solar system-wide eventually. And it is in the hands of the keepers, not in the hands of the bankers. That alone troubles people because of, clearly, bad actors. However, there is a benign aspect to crypto that I learned from Fadih El-Salamin of the Bitcoin Policy Institute. He's based in Washington. And he will help us understand some of the uses that are now prevalent in the troubled parts of the planet. Fadih and others have written a letter to the leaders of Congress to apprise them of these facts. For example, in the Ukraine war, this is late winter 2022, when the crisis was at hand. Headline, CNBC, Ukrainian refugee flees to Poland with $2,000 in Bitcoin on a USB drive. I see other stories that Fadih has made available to me in Syria, in Lebanon, in Afghanistan. Bitcoin, crypto, because it's not belonging to any bank and you don't have to carry large wads of money or other aspects of your assets, make it possible for you to take with you and a way to start again. The refugee crisis upon us. Fadih, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. You've written a letter to Congress to apprise them of all this. Your experience in Washington, is it a surprise to learn that crypto helps the least among us? Is this a revelation to leaders of Congress? Good evening to you.
Thank you, John. I think it is. I think many people are not aware of the positive impact of a cryptocurrency, especially Bitcoin, in places like Afghanistan, where corruption is prevalent, where girls who are working to program to create coding for companies outside of Afghanistan are worried about receiving payments via the banking system, are worried that their payments would be confiscated. And so crypto has been a valuable way of getting them paid and keeping them safe since 2013. I'm almost certain that very few members of Congress are aware of this added value. Aside from Afghanistan, look at Ukraine. The first way to mobilize payments to in order to protect fighters, whether it's helmets, whether it's protective gear, was actually using cryptocurrency because nobody could wait for the banking system. Nobody wanted to wait at 10 and 15 days and also still risk the ability not to transfer funds. Aside from Ukraine, look at Syria. Right now, aid organizations are looking at Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, how to get in aid using Bitcoin so that money is kept away from the corrupt and brutal regime of Bashar al-Assad. And then there are other aspects that I feel like we haven't even explored yet. I'll take a small example, and we can talk about this later if you feel like it. Ethiopia. Ethiopia produces the cleanest and cheapest electricity on Earth. It produces now about 6,000 megawatts of electricity. Many mining companies are dying to get their hands on a deal with Ethiopia where they could produce Bitcoin, but also a country that has 100 million people is able to create foreign currency reserves by selling electricity at a cheap price to Bitcoin miners. So you're creating employment, you're creating hope. So Bitcoin, I'm not here to negate or fight what others are describing it to be. I'm here to state what it is to me and others in the human rights and the poverty and people who are fighting against poverty. Bitcoin is freedom. Bitcoin is development. It's a tool that we should preserve, that we should help protect and keep it in our world because of the good that it's doing.
We'll focus on the signatories of the letter to leaders of Congress, both parties. I note Garry Kasparov is here representing Russia, Ricardo Herrero representing Cuba, or speaking for his Cuban origins, a Venezuelan, a Togo, Africa, Zimbabwe. You mentioned Ethiopia, Norway. We're looking at human rights activists who are aware that crypto is used as a way for people to maintain their dignity when they're dislocated by crisis. This makes sense. And the puzzle is why we haven't heard more about it. Is it because it's early days yet? Let's describe crypto. it's always reproducing itself. There are many different versions, and there's lots of attention by the major banks. However, that's in the world where there's a euro or a dollar that you can count on. That is not the case for these countries, and that drives people to crypto. Did I say that correctly, Fadi?
Absolutely, absolutely correct. In a democracy where there are checks and balances and there are dollars and euros, you're not as worried about your income, you're not as worried about your bank account. But in a corrupt regime where the president and his cronies, where the anti-human rights folks can have access to your bank account, can have access to your balance, can have access and confiscate your salary, can confiscate your income and put your life, put your family's life at risk because you dared to challenge them on their abuses of human rights. You dared to criticize their corruption. Then it's a totally different reality. You need a way to be paid securely. You need a way to be paid without the interference of these corrupt regimes. And that's, I feel, the missing piece for those who send the letter against Bitcoin and against cryptocurrency to Congress. I'm almost certain that they're not aware of these realities outside their bubble.
Crypto has been used by organized crime, especially organized crime coming out of, for example, Russia. Striking, isn't it, Fadi, that the same predators of military means are predators of currency means. Right now, well, how would you describe crypto? Is it still in the witness docket being questioned by the prosecutor and the defense attorney? I mean, I'm using a metaphor here. Or has a decision been made by younger people and by countries around the world to count on crypto, and there's just a reluctance by the large money centers, for example, Washington and New York? Where is the tension, Fadi?
You know, there's a saying, you can't stop an idea, its time has come. And crypto, its time has come already. People are adopting it. People are using it. I think it's time for Washington to catch up. It's time for Congress and other players to catch up to the rest of the world. It's a fact. It's already here. People are already using it. And the interesting fact is that, you know, you could criminalize it if that's what the intention is, but that's not going to help anyone. It's going to complicate the lives of so many people. So my advice to people in Congress, it's already here. We need to find the right regulations to actually encourage it and make it grow, because there are so many implications, positive implications on the economy, positive implications on the world, especially in areas where we are trying to make a huge impact on the fronts of poverty, human rights, and anti-corruption.
We have about a minute. Have you heard back from members of Congress that they're open to learn about these stories that you provide in these troubled parts of the world? Do they want to hear more, Fadi? We have about a minute.
They do. They want to hear more, and the decision hasn't been made to go against cryptocurrency. I'm hopeful, and that's why we're sending letters, and we're going to continue to engage with Congress on this subject.
And crypto is traded routinely now. It's followed very closely by younger people, Fadi, of which I number you happily one. I'm a senior person. However, I have children, and my children enjoy talking about crypto and looking at crypto and despairing when it goes up and down. I think this is a generational switch underway. You are happily addressing members of Congress who are in my cohort. These are the boomers. So by the time we get to the millennials, I think this will be obvious. Fadi El Salamin of the Bitcoin Policy Institute, speaking of the benevolence of a decentralized currency in a crisis. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.